We're the kind of modern day equivalent, really. And although we don't have Typex, our crypto is a little bit more outdated. We still use crypto to authenticate and also encrypt our messages. But effectively, we're doing a very similar job. So we're coordinating the air picture and we're deployable. So we've got the Type 101 radar and we've got the various generators, the tactical control center that comes with it. So we can deploy anywhere in the world, a bit like you would have done. We can set up our kit as a sealed unit and we can look at the air picture. So we can use that for surveillance to see everything that's going on, but we can also use it to communicate with forward air controllers. That's obviously passing process.
Now, what kind of machines do you have in comparison?
It's not half as interesting. It's all just computer screens. So it's very much a case of kind of boxes of equipment now. The whole kit is a bit like a kind of Lego kit, really. It all just stacks together and we can take bits of it. We don't have to take the lot. We can take bits of it depending on what we want to achieve. Yeah, it's all a bit more high-tech.
You have a cold boot for the day like we have. With a setting?
Yeah, we have crypto, yeah. But not with a setting, no. We don't actually need...
When you send a message?
Yep.
Do you have to set a machine up like we did?
No.
Don't do that.
No. That's about all I can say on that. No, it's all done quite differently, but the principles are still very much the same.
These were in use by the Royal Air Force from 1942, and I used one from 1943 till the end of the war in Europe in May 1945. And you have a book of codes which are operational from 00:01 one day to 00:01 the next day. And you change the coding on the machine, on the drum settings there, in accordance with that booklet. But we had two machines on our unit, 83 Group Control Centre, one which we had set up for the previous day and one for the actual day, because we received some messages from the wireless operators that were a day behind, so we had to use the other machine then. You got the booklet, you set it up to the five settings, which the person who sent the message will also set his machine up. You get the message from the wireless operators in groups of five letters. You type it out on the keyboard, which is a typewriter keyboard, and before I joined the Royal Air Force, I'd done quite a lot of typing and it was no problem to me using the keyboard. As a result, when I went on watch, I always got the job of decoding the messages because the other sergeants, they weren't proficient with typing, they were one-finger typers. So I always got that job. And on one watch I was on, we had 7,000 groups of five letters to decode. And when you've typed the message, in each side in these drums, that there was tape. The message came out in plain language that side, and the groups of five letters came out in this side, so that you could check that you'd typed the correct groups. When the message came out there, it was on sticky tape. At the side, you had a little drum with water, very old-fashioned, and you ran the tapes over that and stuck them on the message pad, and then that message pad was given to the operations officer who was in the next vehicle to ours, where they had the plotting table with the airmen moving the things around with the stick, showing where the aircraft were. And when we gave them a message, which we'd probably received either from the Army or from 83 Group Main, saying where the Army wanted the aircraft to operate, then the operations officer would move the aircraft immediately to where the Army wanted it. And we had a watch system which gave you 24 hours leave every third day. You went on watch 1 o'clock one day till 5 o'clock, and then you came on again at 10 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock the next morning, and then you came on again in the evening, and then you came on the next morning and you finished at 1 o'clock. It sounds strange in a war to have a day off, but it wasn't a day off as a way you could do anything. You were always under the rules of the unit. Before we went to Normandy, we had various exercises along the south coast of England. You'd get everything ready, and you were living in tents then, and you moved to perhaps a dozen different places. You'd be there for 4 or 5 days, and then we're off to again to another place. It was so we could get the speed of setting up when we got to Normandy, but we didn't know then where we were going. I sailed from Felixstowe on the A echelon of 83 Group Control Centre, and D-Day was put back a day because of the rough weather. So we were there at the wrong time, really, because obviously the captain of our landing craft hadn't had the message to say it was put back a day. Because we're in such a dangerous place coming through the Straits of Dover, they didn't send us any message. So when we got to the Isle of Wight, which was Piccadilly Circus, the code word in those days, and then he sent us straight down to Normandy. Well, we were anchored off Normandy, 7 miles offshore, at about 5 o'clock in the morning. The battleships were behind us, firing at the French coast, and the Germans were firing back, and we were under this canopy. Well, sadly, a lot of the shells from the Germans dropped short, and the landing craft were lined up, hundreds of us, and they dropped on the landing craft, and he just blew them up. The beach that I landed on, when we landed, it was very quiet. They were still shelling, you know, the Germans were. But we had a dry landing in our lorry, straight down the deck, and then we had a map reference where to go, and we went there, and we just had to wait there. Caen was a target for the army, but there just happened to be a German battalion outside Caen, and that was why the army couldn't take Caen until 33 days after the invasion. As a result, we were stuck on the beach from the 6th of June until the 9th, until they constructed an airstrip at Bazonville, and that was when we moved and started the operational work then. About 10 days after B echelon arrived of the 83 Group Control Centre, followed by a week later by C echelon, and that brought the unit up to 1,000 strong, and at this little village called Bazonville. From Bazonville, we carried on then to Villers-Bocage, and then we continued about 7 miles behind the army all the time. We crossed the Rhine the day after the army had crossed, and then we finished up at a place called Schneverdingen, a little village in Germany. When we arrived there, it was sad, really. There was a goods train parked on the siding, and there were Russian prisoners. They had them off the train and made them dig a pit, and then they had them there and shot them all. And when we got there, all these bodies were still in this communal grave. But of course, then the army took over, and they got the civilians to bring them out and bury them properly. The peace treaty was signed for Europe whilst we were at Schneverdingen. A week after, we were flown back to Croydon because we were en route to Japan then. So they sent us on a course for a more slip reading. And then the war in Japan finished then. They sent us up to Blackpool, kitted us out with tropical kit. We couldn't weigh this up. Where are we going? Oh, you're going to the Far East, because they want you there as occupation troops. There was no code and cipher then, that had finished. So we got the boat down to Bombay. When we got to Bombay, it brought us all off. I got posted to RAF Delhi, which was, you know, 2 days' ride. And then when you go to an RAF station, you get a piece of paper with all the sections on.
Yeah, you still
get
that.
They still do that.
Yeah.
Where you have to get clearance. We got to the medical officer, and he took me temperature, and he says, have you got your small kit with you? Well, unfortunately, I had to go in hospital. And he said, oh, we'll have the ambulance here. So they took me out 10 miles out of Delhi, a place called Delhi Cantonment, which was an isolation hospital, and I got diphtheria. The code book was a vital part of the job. Now, one of our FDPs, forward direction post, the sergeant in charge there, mislaid the book. So all the books throughout Britain had to be destroyed. Of course, the sergeant, he got court-martialed and reduced to the rank of corporal. Now, another thing which nearly everybody did was kept a diary, which was another court-martial offence if you got caught.
Yeah.
But we didn't bother because the court-martial was held in this country and you go to prison in this country and you're out of the war. But
not that bad then.
No.
What made you decide to type out your diaries?
Well, for the record, for my daughter and my grandchildren.
And what do they make of it?
Where is she? What would you make of it?
Very, very proud.
What's it like to see a Typex now after all this time?
Yeah, they didn't have one here for a long time, and they didn't have one at Hendon. And it annoyed me they got the Enigma there, but they haven't got ours there.
The German machine, but not the British machine.
That's right, yeah. But you see, it doesn't get a lot of publicity, this.
There's a chap just behind you who had a career in the diplomatic service and is very familiar with Typex machines. This is Peter Westcombe, one of our founding trustees.
Yes, I see you know the beast as well, you.
Yeah. Have a go.
That's it. Oh, very good. I never thought I'd see one working again.